Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone, and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. Today we have a founder, you know, that he's done it all. You know, he's done it multiple times. He's built unicorn companies, and now he's really, you know, after reflecting on his career as a very successful founder, he's now, you know, giving back, you know, really investing and helping other founders as well. So we're going to go through everything. I think that you're going to find this episode very inspiring. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Boris Manhart. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Alejandro. It's great to be here. Thanks a lot.
So originally born right outside of Zurich. So give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up?
Well, imagine a huge playground, lots of green, lakes, forest, mountain view, and that close to the city of Zurich. So it was great. It was great growing up here. My parents were teachers. So they had a lot of time. We traveled a lot in Europe. I really liked to grow up here and actually move back. So I live again here close to my mother's house. So my kids grew up the same way as I did.
So eventually you went to the University of Zurich too, and you got into psychology. Out of all things, why psychology?
Probably I wanted to understand myself a little better. I don't know. I remember that, you know, especially as a kid, I was always a little bit different. And I always had this very kind of, you know, like free spirit. It's probably something that led me into this entrepreneurial career I did and afterwards. But I guess like many others, you know, like you basically try to treat yourself and go into psychology, right? But anyway, I remember like the first day I was sitting there, I asked myself the same question. So I really couldn't imagine doing this for the next 5 years. So what I did basically at the university, I worked on one hand. So I worked as a waiter. So I did a lot of night shifts and I liked to go out, you know, did a lot of clubbing. And that by coincidence actually led me to my first venture. So you can imagine as a young student, you don't have the money to go out every night or at least a couple of times a week, right? You don't have the money to pay the drinks and so forth. But they wouldn't even let you enter the clubs. So what we did is we created this website. It's called Pulp back then. And we went into the clubs, took pictures of the party crowd, and put them the next day on this website. And imagine this was really the early days of internet. This was the mid-90s, 96 probably, something like that. And it got a little of traction, so people would go on the website. It was all pre-social media, right? So they really liked basically seeing themselves on the website somewhere. And we did this for a couple of years. So we always went to the clubs, took pictures, put it on the website, and people would come. And probably we grew that to, I would say, let's say a couple of thousand users. It wasn't a lot, right? So, but back then, it was enough. We were lucky enough to actually sell it then to a big corporate. And they were interested in using that for advertising.
How old were you at that time?
I was around 20, in my early 20s.
I mean, it's pretty wild to be at that age and doing a transaction with Unilever. So how did the whole thing with Unilever, you know, happen? How did they come knocking?
Well, they had this brand called Axe. I don't know if you know that, but it's a deodorant brand. And they were focusing on the party scene, right? They thought it's a great idea to have something like something we did. And so they basically purchased the website and helped us as well then to start the next venture, which was iMedia, a online agency, right? So together with basically the first customer, we started our own online agency then.
What would you say that, you know, being able to do first company, first exit, doing a transaction with someone like Unilever, what kind of visibility do you think that gave you into the whole fundraising process? I mean, fundraising process, the life cycle, more than fundraising process, the life cycle of, you know, starting, building, scaling, and exiting.
Alejandro, I really have to admit that at this stage, we didn't even consider the thing we did as a startup, right? So it was more a project. It was really for fun.
Yeah.
And we sold it by coincidence. So with that transaction, I actually got into business, right? So everything before was just, let's say, side hustle. It was really about partying. It was really about getting into those clubs. And then it became serious because we suddenly had this big customer. We had to deliver. And I was very young at this stage and was probably not ready to really lead a company and you know, build a team and so forth. Right. So I was struggling a lot at this stage. And the other thing what happened, you know, still remember, you know, then we were pretty close to the whole burst of the internet bubble. So basically that happened when we started our company, our internet company, right? And we actually were acquiring other customers. So we had a hard start. And this was, you know, like basically my first, steps into the business world. And it wasn't easy back then.
So obviously after this, you started the ad agency. So I guess, the ad agency, what kind of, learnings did you get from, because I find that there's a lot of companies that build this stuff and they are hoping that people will come. I think as you were doing the ad agency, you know, I'm sure that gave you further insights into building distribution, you know, getting the right type of channels right, you know, to be able to get more people in the door, you know, at the best day possible price. What kind of insights did you get from doing that?
I think that's right. It's a very good question, Alejandro. I think it helped me to understand the whole acquisition part as well, because I was doing that for different brands. And, you know, I just mentioned, you know, the internet bubble bursted and we had a tough start basically, but we got some traction. So we acquired customers like Microsoft, Nestle, Saab, BMW. So we had really good big brands basically working from them. And I think, one of the learnings is really how to attract people to do something, right? So just, you know, like how to acquire customers out there, how to find right customers, basically. And that this is something I learned before I started, you know, basically bigger venture. So this is something that really helped me. And the other thing I would say, it gave me some, I would say, tough lessons on leadership, because I just got into that, right? So I wasn't prepared to really lead a company, to work with a whole team and so forth. I remember I was really a bad leader. I was a micromanager. I did everything on my own, basically, right? And my understanding of leadership was that I have to be better than the others, right? And this is something I learned. That's probably the biggest lesson I got from this area, is what is actually leadership? You know, like what is kind of empowering others instead of just doing it on your own or trying to do it better and really working with great people with great talent.
I mean, no kidding, because that obviously was a really nice segue into the fintech incubator that you did. So obviously at that point now it was more about taking a look at teams and putting them, you know, with the right type of capital and the right, perhaps, you know, product market fit too. So how did you really think or what did you get from seeing all the key ingredients, you know, that are necessary for a startup to thrive? I mean, what were some of those ingredients that were critical for something to really be magical?
Yeah. So you mentioned already, like product market fit is extremely important. And I cannot, you know, say how much it actually matters. It's the most crucial point you need to achieve to become successful, basically. And what does product market fit mean? It means building something your customers actually want. And this is something lots of people misunderstand, right? So lots of people actually start just building something what they think customers would like or what they like, basically. And I see it very much actually happening in Europe, probably more than in the US, that lots of founders just build, right? So to start with the product vision, create something, and then they just put it out on the market. And then at this time, they realize there's probably no market for it, or the product should be totally different, right? And to prevent that, I think it's super important to really go deep when it comes to understanding your customer, understanding their problems before you even start building. And I would say this is one of the most crucial topics, which is something I failed as well in my career in many different phases. And it's hard to not just focus on building because all founders, and I assume you as well, Elkhan, you know what I mean. We're builders, right? We want to create something. We're not market researchers. It's probably not the nicest part of our work to always talk to people or do really kind of like reading all studies and whatever on the internet. So we really want to build something, we want to create something. So it's a hard part, but it's necessary.
So one of the things that came out, you know, from this experience too, and it was a really nice segue to it as well, was numbers. Probably one of the biggest companies that you've done, a company that ended up becoming a unicorn. So how did the whole idea of numbers come together, you know, with the team, and how do you guys bring it to life?
Well, it's an interesting story. This was actually right after I left iMedia. I got an offer from the original founder of Numbers, or at this stage it was Centralway. So basically it was a fintech incubator, a company builder. And he just acquired or merged with an agency, right? So basically my first job was to restructure this agency and build a team that is able to create ventures, right? But we had this agency, and this agency was in very bad shape. We still had customers at this stage, and we didn't want to work for customers. We want to work for our own ventures, basically. So my job was actually, which was a pretty funny thing, I had to get rid of the customers, right? So, and that meant, you know, I had to basically fix the projects and deliver what they were expecting. So another agency could take over, or basically the projects were ready for them to start, right? So that was the first phase of the whole thing. And then after that, we started with, I guess, two or three projects. I remember one was in insurances and the other was numbers. And the idea of numbers was to merge, or was to aggregate different bank accounts. And imagine at this stage, this was around 2012, there was no mobile banking around. So this was pre-mobile bank. And so we created the first mobile bank, but a bank that, or basically a mobile banking app that could aggregate all different banks. So it doesn't matter if it was Deutsche Bank or a Postbank or whatever. So you could just use all the accounts you had. It would give you recommendations and a great overview over your spendings. So that was the basic idea, and it got a lot of traction, especially from the investor side. And I imagine it was a really interesting time because in this time, imagine Switzerland was still the center of banking, right? And we pitched to like those, you know, big guys of banking, the big executives back then. And this was a very interesting experience because I never had contact with people like that, right? And I started pitching to them together with the founder, Martin. And I would say he's probably the best salesperson I've ever met. And learning from him was great, right? So it gave me a lot, actually, to pitch to these guys where I obviously had a lot of respect. You know, you saw them in the newspapers and so forth, but together with him, he was super brave. He was really wasn't fearing anything. So it's great to learn from him. And, I did this for not such a long time. I guess I stayed less than 2 years at, Numbers, but, they continue, and then they made it a unicorn. So I guess they raised around 120 or 130 million in total.
And what was the journey there of raising the money? You know, how did you guys get started and what were the financing cycles like?
But at the beginning, it was really like just, you know, reaching out to all those finance guys. So we had a focus on angel investors at the beginning. And then obviously it became more institutional after a while. We had as well investors like big media company in Germany and so forth. So we had different kinds of investors. And it wasn't the same landscape that it is today. So today you have lots of VCs, right? It's pretty clear who to talk to. But at this stage, it wasn't that clear, right? So we had to figure out, so who's the right fit for such a topic. So we start with finance professionals, basically.
So at the peak of the valuation, what was the valuation of the company?
It was 1 billion. It was like a straight 1 billion.
That's amazing. For being in Europe, you know, being able to achieve that is really remarkable.
Hey, guys. So pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
Eventually, you know, like what you did is you moved on to become the CEO of Kochik. And, you know, you were there as you guys were leading sustainability in the in shopping, you know, basically in shopping, around shopping apps, no?
Exactly. So Kochik was an amazing experience. Again, imagine this was 2014, and now we have tons of impact investors, and sustainability is a big topic, right? So it's not just a topic anymore, it's a need. But at this stage, it was very niche. And I remember, you know, like numbers, I took some time off and I helped my wife to start a cosmetic brand. We were focused on natural cosmetics in the luxury segment. And during my research, I stepped over this website, Kochik. I did a lot of research. I got back on this website all the time. Back then, it was more like an MVP, right? So the website looked quite basic, and but it was enough for me. And I remember at one day they put a job ad on the website and they were searching for a partner. So I thought that's actually quite interesting because I was seeking for something with, I would say, more meaningful, right? And I called them up and we had a couple of meetings. And after as well meeting their first investors, I started as a managing partner and then a CEO. And this was kind of a journey because at the beginning we were a small community, basically, right? There were some consumers that, you know, wanted to know what's in their products. We focused mainly on cosmetics and food. And the app basically would, you know, like tell you what's inside, right? If you basically scan the barcode of a product, will give you all information on ingredients. So that was the case of Kojak. And during the years, it grew to, I would say, really go to shopping app in the German-speaking markets. So we had around, at its peak, probably 4 to 5 million active users in a market of 100 million total people, right? So it was quite big, actually. We were a couple of times the most downloaded app in Germany. And that includes Facebook and Google and so forth. So it was a great journey, a really interesting journey. But what was really different to numbers and the whole fintech sector, like the whole fundraising was super tough. Right. So we didn't have a real business beside. It was really just more an impact idea, and we had to create the business around that.
So then at what point, do you decide it's time to make a switch here?
During the pandemic, when we really had challenges, right? And I realized more and more that, we didn't really achieve product market fit at this stage. We had lots of traction, but the willingness to pay from our consumers or from our users wasn't big enough. We tried it with, B2B, and this didn't work as well. So we couldn't really create a sustainable business model. And I tried a lot. I tried many different things. And after a while, I just said, I don't have any ideas anymore. So let's bring in new people. Right. So, and I left and new people took over and they tried as well. And after that, I basically started reflecting on what I was missing. And that's basically where I started with my new venture, which is Growth Unlimited. Right.
So let's talk about that, because obviously Growth Unlimited, is the result of you doing your reflection about your entrepreneurial journey, taking a look at the, all the different companies that you were involved with, the companies that you saw, the companies that you helped. So how did Growth Unlimited come together and what are you guys doing there?
It was basically a coincidence, because at the beginning, I really started reflecting on my career, right? I guess I wrote everything down. It became like 150 pages or so. I never published it, I have to admit, but I could publish it. So a book on venture building, basically. And I guess I detected two main areas where I could have needed more support. And one was methodologies and frameworks, right? You can take OKRs or whatever, right? This always takes a lot of time to implement. You start with something, and as a startup, you don't have the money to get consultants, so you just do it, right? And then you start iterating. And especially when it comes to OKRs, this can take ages. Like, probably you need 4 iterations. That's a year. I'm not talking about weeks. I'm talking about a year, right? So you're losing a lot of time on stuff that actually doesn't add value to the whole thing, right? Doesn't lead you to your goals. And this is something where I see, it's super important to get help from someone that actually knows it from the beginning, to just implement it right from the start, do it right, understand it. And the other thing is this typical operational jungle that you get in as a founder. Doesn't matter which stage of the company, it's the same at the beginning. I mean, when you start something new, you suddenly have so many hats on, right? So basically, you're the designer, you're the engineer, you're the psychologist, whatever, right? So you have to do things that you never thought of doing, right? And nobody just, can do this from scratch. Nobody's born with all those things, right? Or just study years to learn psychology, to learn design. But you just have to do it immediately. And I guess here, founders naturally need some help, and as well need someone by their sides to, just sometimes get back on track. Because what happens, you get into this jungle, you don't know where to go anymore, where to head anymore. And having someone by your side, okay, take it just, a little bit outside of this jungle and tell you, okay, now focus on that, only on that, right? So that's very helpful. Nobody's, you have the boards, you probably have an advisory board, but it's always something where you have to seek for advice. But you don't have this person just by your side that really tells you, okay, now you need something different. You need to focus on something differently. And that's basically the main idea of Growth Unlimited, is really to be this person to help founders to find the right track, to find focus, and to do this in a very structured way as well, right?
And what's the cycle that you guys would typically look at? Is it the pre-seed, seed, Series A? Where do you typically like to come in?
We even start earlier, and that's probably a big issue in Europe. I think, you know, like when it comes to the US, you have very early investors. But usually in Europe, you need to prove a little bit more, right? So there are some VCs that, you know, jump in pre-seed or seed stage, but there's nothing before. So we really like to work with founders with just an idea. So really at the beginning, so before they have a product, before they've done, you know, lots of things wrong, right? And do all the iterations. So really want to help them and to guide them and do this in fast pace. Because I strongly believe that you can reach product market fit within a couple of months. You don't need to do this within years, right? So you can achieve this much faster. But obviously you need to know what you do. You need to know the steps, right? And this is where we jump in.
So then I guess as let's say you're looking at all these different companies, what is typically the biggest issue or the repeating pattern that you see on the thing that they're lacking the most? Is it product market fit?
Exactly. I mean, the biggest issue is just building without understanding the customer. So really creating something for you than for someone else. Right? And I guess that's a very common trap lots of founders actually fall in, right? So they create their vision and they don't really check if there's a market for it. They don't really understand the customer's needs before that. And I guess here you should really go deep. You have to do your homework before you start building something.
And how do you go deep? How do you go deep to really make sure that you get the customer, that you're not building based on assumptions, that you're building based on data?
Absolutely. I mean, you need to have assumption at the beginning, right? Already the market is an assumption, but then you need to start doing research. There's a lot of research out there already, so you don't need to start from scratch, right? But anyway, I mean, you need to talk to your customer. You need to find about their pains. And that's only something you can find out when you do a lot of interviews, basically, at the beginning. So one thing that I usually start with is really kind of writing down what's the most attractive market to start with. I'm not talking about attractive in terms of market size. Obviously, that's something you need to know, right? But then you need to really understand, okay, what's my niche where I want to start? And then basically it's all about talking to people, you know, inside of this niche and find out how you can serve them. And already here, lots of, the struggle start because, you don't know how to conduct interviews, right? As a founder, you don't train with conducting interviews. So basically what I often see is that founders sell their vision. So instead of an interview, they do a sales pitch. But you should always start with the problem of your customers and understand the problems first and then create the solution. So it's really about your customers tell you about their struggles, about their problems, and not you tell them about your solution, basically.
Mm. Yeah, I like that because one of the things too that I found is founders, when they're speaking with customers too, they're trying to get some data from them. Instead of like giving them too much guidance on their responses, is basically making open-ended questions so that you can just let them go. No?
Exactly. I think, you know, especially when it comes to interviews, the challenge is more like leading your interview in a direction of the topic you want to hear about, right? But nothing more. So you just guide them there, but you don't know, you don't kind of push them into a certain answer, right? So you just want to hear them talk, basically. So one good thing is you can really ask them about their journey in X or Y, right? So just, you know, how do you interact with, I don't know, healthcare, right? And just listen, basically write everything down. And honestly, Alejandro, I've never seen a startup doing this really well. So I always start with looking into the data when I start working with founders. And usually, and everybody says, okay, I do the interviews. I have my data, but when you look into the data, it's just not really valuable. It doesn't bring you anything, right? It gives you false positives or negatives.
So let me ask you this. Let's say I was to put you into a time machine and I bring you back in time, maybe to the time that you were coming out of University of Zurich and you were doing your psychology degree. And let's say you now have the time to have a sit down with that younger self, that younger Boris, and you're able to give your younger self right before going at it as an entrepreneur one piece of advice before launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
Well, that's you start really early, right? So, well, I mean, I would say it's probably two different advices, so two different areas. One is the professional area and one is more the personal, right? So when it comes to business, always I would say, okay, go really deep when it comes to product market fit and don't start scaling because you have true product market fit. You know, it happened that I had to let go a whole sales team because I wasn't able to build a scalable sales playbook for them, right? So what worked for me as a founder, and as a founder, you have all the information, right? So it's much easier to sell than for a sales representative, right? So it's different. So you need to be able to brief them, to give them the tools to be able to sell. So I had to let them go, and they were obviously very pissed at me, right? So, and it was all my mistake. I knew it. And this is not necessary. So basically, really go deep, understand before all the processes. You need to understand it, then start, you know, scaling, then start hiring and so forth. So that's an important thing. And then as well, and what I mentioned, you know, about leadership, really understanding leadership, understand that leadership is about, I would say, supporting others, creating an environment where others can thrive, where it can be their best, or you know, really, really kind of and be productive, and give them the freedom as well, but align them on the goals, right? I mentioned OKRs, for example, and the other thing is a very personal topic, right? So I have to say, like this year was one of the hardest for me. My wife got diagnosed with cancer at the beginning of this year. And she went through all the treatments. She got chemotherapy, immunotherapy, and nothing worked. Right? She's now at home. I'm taking care of her. But, you know, looking back and really thinking of the time I spent in the office, I spent chasing my dreams, I spent, you know, creating the next unicorn, whatever, and not being at home, not being with my loved ones, this is something I definitely would change and advise the younger me that what really matters is spending time with your loved ones, spending time with your family, having this, you know, good balance of career, being professional is obviously, but as well of being with your loved ones and talking really about family and friends, right? So people that really matter to you. Another thing as well, is about taking care of yourself, right? My wife always said, you know, what matters most is health. And obviously everybody says yes, but you only know what health actually means when you don't have it anymore, right? So it's super important as well to take care about yourself, to do whatever sports, meditation, or whatever is good for you, right? But take time for yourself as well during this whole journey.
This is a so profound, Boris. And I think that you're hitting, you know, the nail on the head. You know, I think that founders typically, you know, they just tend to leave everything, you know, to the side and just keep going, like the hustling, no mentality that exactly. People would talk about. And I think you're so right, because at the end of the day, you know, memories is everything that we're going to be taking with us, and companies, you know, come and go, but ultimately true. Your own family and friends, you know, is really what make us, you know, who we are. No, and there was even a study of Harvard that talked about happiness and joy and how ultimately your social points was increasing that well-being. So Boris, I am very grateful that you joined us. Obviously wishing your wife as well the best, you know, and a fast
thank
recovery. And I just want to thank you on behalf of the listeners and also myself, you know, for giving us the honor of coming on the show and sharing your journey. So thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today.
Thank you so much, Alejandro. It's a pleasure.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.